still, he was just silently tolerating it, without it all being disturbed and offering all respect. This is a mani namana then. If somebody, if we have a fault that's correct, and someone points it out, we start defending ourselves. No, no, not like that. You don't understand. Right? He was hurling the most terrible abuses, which were untrue, but he was just silent, like a tree. Maharaj Ambarish exhibited such exalted qualities of a Vaishnava. And because he was like this, even though he really had no yogic powers himself that are mentioned, because he was simply Amani na Manadena, Krishna, with all of his power, was there to protect him. See, if we try to protect our own egos, then it's us against that person. But if we give up any inclination or attempt to protect, then Krishna protects us. It's like Draupadi, as long as she was trying to defend herself, Krishna just let her try. When she gave up and said, I can't do it, Krishna, I'm yours, then Krishna took over. This is surrender. Surrender means I cannot protect, only Krishna can protect. For Draupadi, it was on the physical level, the gross body. For Ambarish Maharaja, it was on the platform of the subtle body and the gross body. The subtle body, first he just hurled the most horrible, horrible abuses. Should we read it? Ninth canto. And that Maharaj Ambarish had drunk water without his permission. This is the great danger of developing these powers. The power of jnana, knowledge, the power of yoga, siddhi, even the power of wealth, any of these opulences. The tendency is that we want to become the Lord. We become infatuated. We want to be the Lord. We want to be the master. And we cannot tolerate anyone who is not seen as such. So Durrasa Muni, he was such an incredible, he had all the eight mystic siddhis in their perfect state. He was such an incredible scholar. Every type of qualification, like a great rishi. But it says that he was furious that Maharaj Ambarish drank water without his permission. Still hungry, Durvasa Muni, his body trembling, his face curved and his eyebrows crooked in a frown, angrily spoke as follows to King Ambarish, who stood before him with folded hands. Mani na manadena, manadena, folded hands. I am your servant. Alas, just see the behavior of this cruel man. He is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence and his position, he considers himself to be God. Just see how he has transgressed the laws of religion. Maharaj Ambarish, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you. As Durvasa Muni said this, his face became red with anger. Uprooting a bunch of hair from his head, he created a demon resembling the blazing fire of devastation to punish Maharaj Ambarish. This is actually the goal of our life, to be able to bear the most terrible insults with folded palms and offer all respect to others. Because only when we can do this do we have the complete protection of Krishna. To the degree we're trying to protect our false egos, to that degree we forget Krishna. Krishna forgets us, and that's in the sense that he does not take the time or the trouble. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana pariyapashita esha nitya vayuktanam yogakshamam. For those who surrender to Krishna, Krishna carries what they lack and earns what they have. This is the greatness of Maharaj. This is the greatness of bhakti. Although Durvas Muni had the power to prolong fasts, he had the power to emaciate his body through so many incredible austerities, he did not have the power to bear the insult of his prestige. And Ambarish Maharaj, he is not such a great tapasi. He is a humble devotee. He is victorious. Tani Saravani Sanyaya Yukta Asita Makarava Sehi Asundi Anipasita Devata. Simply to control the senses is not enough. We must fix the consciousness of Krishna. That is complete. Restrain the senses and fix the consciousness. You cannot fix the consciousness on Krishna unless you control your senses. And you cannot control your senses unless you fix your consciousness on Krishna. You cannot have one without the other. And really, this is the basis of our whole initiation. What do we vow when we take Diksha? We vow to chant 16 rounds every day. What does that mean? To fix your consciousness on Krishna through his name. And we vow to follow the four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. Which is to restrain the senses from the heart. Tani Saravani Sanyanya Yukta Asita Makara Vasehi Asundriyani Pasu Pajyaka. It's such an important verse. To follow the four regulative principles is to restrain the senses. To always chant the holy names is to fix the consciousness. This is the basis of Krishna consciousness. Cannot have one without the other. Vedrayam indriyai sevan mukhe hi jivadava svayam eva spuratyata. When unless one's senses are positively engaged in the process of devotional service, the senses will not be purified. And then we cannot overcome these misconceptions. But for one who has purified senses, Krishna is known, Krishna is revealed, Krishna is manifested. The senses that are pure perceive Krishna everywhere. The senses that are impure perceive illusion everywhere. Atasri Krishna Namani Nabhavetrayan Indraya Seva Mukha Hijiva Rojas vayam eva sukhavati. This means by engaging the senses in the service of the Lord, they become purified, and then only can we perceive Krishna. Then only can we understand Krishna. Jivado, and the most important, the basis of all the sense control of our life, is controlling our tongue. From the positive side, to keep our consciousness fixed on Krishna, it means to hear and to chant. When we chant the holy names with our tongue, the tongue keeps our consciousness fixed on Krishna. And it's also a straight line between the tongue, belly, and sex organs. And it is said by the Shastra and by the Acharyas, Bhakti Vinod Thakur has given a wonderful explanation of this process, that if the tongue is controlled, then it becomes easy to control all the other senses. But if the tongue is not controlled, it is impossible to control all the others. Just like a boat, you can have a big, gigantic ship. It may hold, there are big ocean liners where 3,000-4,000 people can live on it at a time. Huh? But in the back, there's something called a rudder, which is actually very small. And whichever way the rudder goes, the entire gigantic ship and all the thousands of passengers go that way. And it just so happens that the rudder looks just like a tongue. Huh? It's kind of flat and shaped like tongue. And if the rudder goes this way, the whole boat and everything and everyone on the boat goes that way. And if the rudder goes this way, everything goes this way. So similarly, this body, it says that the human body is like a boat. It's meant to carry us across this material ocean. And the tongue is like the rudder. Although our body is very, very big. And the tongue is just one little part. But if the tongue goes one way, our whole life, our whole consciousness goes that way. Whichever way our tongue is directed, our consciousness and our whole life will go in that direction. Restrain the senses and fix the consciousness on Krishna. If the tongue is always talking about Krishna and it's restraining from sense enjoyment, from worldly talks, from sense enjoyment, then all of our senses, all of our body, all of our consciousness. Consciousness is like the passenger in the boat. It all goes toward Krishna. And in order to control the senses, we have to, Krishna says, restrain. Some nonsense people, they do not preach this sense control. They preach, you just do your meditation, or you just chant Harinam, it doesn't matter, you can do anything you want, and you will become pure. Like one meditation teacher was teaching in America, Prabhupada, we have to, Krishna says, restrain. Some nonsense people, they do not preach this sense control. They preach, you just do your meditation and you just chant Harinam, it doesn't matter, you can do anything you want, and you will become pure. Like one meditation teacher was teaching in America, Prabhupada used to very much criticize him. But you just meditate half hour morning, half hour evening, and you do as you like. Huh? And there are even some people in the name of bhaktas who teach, you just chant every day. But as far as all this tapasya and all this sense control and all these giving up of pleasures and all this detachment, this is not needed, you just chant the holy name. This is not the philosophy of deity. This is not the philosophy of the Acharyas. Therefore, Prabhupada said, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no nudity. That's on the grossest level. And for those who are actually seriously following that, he gave so many other, no talking of any nonsense, no gossip, no overpossession. He read this, with reasons of fall down by Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami, those who are actually serious in following the path of bhakti. So we cannot accept these bogus philosophies. Prabhupada was vain, even in America. He was fearless. He said, people, they will hate me when I tell them about these regulations. The whole American society, the whole economic system is based on breaking the four regulations. Prabhupada said in one lecture, famous, I used to love this lecture. He was just talking about giving up sense gratification. And at the very end of the lecture, he just brought the whole class to a summit. At the very end, he said, and when we take over this world, there will be no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, no illicit sex, so many no's, and the demons, they will die. And everyone really said, thank you very much. And everyone went, Jai Prabhupada. Because it is a fact, demons cannot live without these things. Their life and soul. If you examine the economy of the Western countries, what are the biggest industries? The biggest industry on the face of the earth is drugs. Billions of dollars a day are being spent on drugs. It is the biggest number one industry on the planet Earth. The cocaine, heroin, all of these opium derivatives, it's the number one industry in the world. You notice some of the most biggest powerful ones, cigarettes, alcohol, meat. In India, this is one of the topmost, highest, biggest industries, the meatpacking industry. They're so powerful that President Carter was at one time, there was a big convention, and the vegetarian societies convinced him that one meal of that convention, it was several days, this convention. It was like probably 20 meals. They asked one meal, make it vegetarian. He said yes. And the meat packers revolted. And they had all their lobbyists and all big politicians and everything, you know, get paid off by them. They went to Carter and said, you do this, you're finished. You're dead. You're going to ruin your reputation. You're going to ruin your career, everything. If you have one day a vegetarian, that means you are recognizing vegetarianism. And by you, a big person like you recognizing, it will influence so many people to think about it and consider it, and it will mean billions of dollars for the American economy of people buying meat. Millions and millions of workers working in these meat industries. Huh? And what to speak of illicit sex? Illicit sex, the background of the whole economy. Everything is advertised on the basis of sex, right? So many products are being sold, actually, whether it's a car, whether it's clothes, whether it's cosmetics, whether it's music, tape, it's all based on sex, right? Illicit sex, cinema industry, television industry, power. $1 a year. And what is the basis of it? Just even, let's just speak of America, just look at the billboards in Bombay. Where Brahmacharis walk down the street and they just look up and there's this gigantic billboard with a man going like this, women going like this. All sex and violence, every one of those billboards. I haven't seen hardly anything if not sex and violence. This is a massive industry. In this society, to go against the grain of propaganda, so to speak of gambling. In America now, I think after drugs, gambling is number two biggest money making in America. There's Las Vegas, there's Atlantic City, there's lotteries everywhere. One of our own people from Bombay, I won't mention names, but you all know him. He went to America He went to Las Vegas, and in 4 minutes, he lost $20,000. That's about what? About 8 laps? He finished within less than 5 minutes. That's all he had. Just got completely, it's just such a fever that you just, the atmosphere just creates such a fever of greed that you just get so sucked into it. What is the difference between a Godas and a Goswami? Like I said, a Goswami, it doesn't mean he doesn't have desire for sense making. Paramahansa has no desire for sense making. A Goswami doesn't mean he has no desire. Doesn't mean his senses are not, in his mind, are not calling for pleasures. A Goswami is one who's willing to say no whenever the proposition for sense enjoyment comes into his life. And a Godas is one who says yes. You see some forbidden object of the sense enjoyment, the desire is there, please enjoy. Your tongue is saying enjoy, your eyes are saying enjoy, your flesh is saying enjoy. If you say, yes, I will enjoy, you are Godas. If you say, no, this is not what Buddha wants me to do, you are Goswami. Only senses. Goswami means one is willing to be the master. One who's willing to say no. Goswami Prabhupada defined in many places as one who's willing to say no to the senses. Basic principle. And therefore, I remember one time Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture in San Francisco, and a very, very famous rock and roll band came to see him. They were called the Fugs. They had sold millions of records. They were very influential. And they were a little favorable towards spiritual life. And the devotees were thinking, if they can become favorable to Prabhupada, then they will influence so many millions of people to be favorable towards Krishna consciousness. They can get millions to chant all this. Huh? So, somehow or other, they were convinced to come in to sit in one of Prabhupada's lectures. Now, all they sing about is illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, because they're speculating their minds away, thinking that this is the goal of life, this is how to achieve the highest. And they were also meat eaters. Like everybody in America, practically. But they were very famous and very powerful in their influence. And very simple. So they sat. And they sat in Prabhupada's lecture, and he was preaching about this body, and he was preaching about God, and they were in rapt attention, sitting, really listening wonderfully. And the devotees, I've spoken to the devotees who were there. They were thinking, we just hope Prabhupada doesn't mention the four regulative principles in this lecture, because it will really offend these people, because they're considered very great acharyas, practically, of the young generation. You know, whatever they sing, everyone says, oh, yes, very good, I will do like this. Whatever these musicians sing about, the whole young society just follows. Yes, this must be the right thing. Huh? It's like Bugs Aparad, to mention the four regulative principles to them. So the devotees were just thinking, Prabhupada, don't say it, these four regulative. And it's just he was just talking about all the positive aspects of Krishna consciousness. He was talking about Krishna, talking about the regulative principles, talking about the soul. And these men were just, listening and watching. Always were in ecstasy to see these big, big idols of the young generation just absorbing such attention from us. the very, just in the peak of the lecture,
Prabhupada says,
and if you want to be God conscious, you must give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. These are the four pillars of sinful activities.
The thugs were four men, four or five. As soon as they heard that, they became so insulted, they just got up and left, never to be seen again by another Vaishnava.
Prabhupada just continued his lecture. They walked out. The devotees were like, Prabhupada, why did you do that? You ruined everything.
And then at the end, they told Prabhupada, you know what happened? These were big famous people. They came in for your lecture. When you said the four regular principles, Prabhupada laughed. He said, we must speak the truth. We must speak the truth. He said, if we do not speak the truth, we will be cheating them. He said, there are so many cheaters who are telling people what they want to hear. He said, I have not come to cheat. I have come to give the message of Krishna. Tani saravani samyam bhavas. Thank you all very much for your kind mercy upon me.
But I do not agree with this philosophy.
He said it's not practical.
But I do not agree with this philosophy. It's not practical.
By the three modes of material nature.
Ahankara vimudatma karata amiti.
One is bewildered due to false ego.
And we see in the human society how everyone is absolutely being bewitched and bewildered by material energy. All of the problems we find throughout the world, the big, big politicians, the scientists, they're bewildered. They just don't know what to do. But due to their mental concoction and their false egos, they're all thinking that someday they will find some answer. But this has been going on amongst materialists since the beginning of time. They've never found an answer. They can never find an answer. Because it's said in Gita that this material energy is endlessly mutable. Krishna says in the 15th chapter, it's like a banyan tree. Banyan tree grows in such a way that no one knows where is its beginning, no one knows where the middle is, no one knows where the end is. That's the nature of this material world. How can we find a solution when we don't even know what is the problem? Huh? The problem is lack of God consciousness, and only a bona fide spiritual master can teach us the solution to that. That is why it is said Guru is heavy. Everyone else's opinion weighs nothing. But the Guru's opinion is the opinion of God. It is the absolute truth. Therefore it outweighs the ideas and the speculations and the concoctions of all the scientists, all the philanthropists, all of the politicians, all of the scholars. They're all simply speculating. They are bewildered by the power of Maya. Prakrite kriyamana niguna karmani saravasha ahankara vimutatma karatam iti mani. So Krishna is explaining in this second chapter of the Gita what is the basic, most fundamental principles of truth. That we are not this body. That we are the eternal soul. That the soul is living within this body according to his activities, which are under the influence of the three modes of material nature. And according to the activities we perform under the influence of the three modes of material nature, that will determine the condition of the soul in the future, in various forms of life. So Krishna explains, Neha Bikramana Sosi Pratyavayunat Vijite Svalpamapyasya Dharamasya Trayate Mahato. That in the material endeavor, whatever you gain, you lose. But on the spiritual path, whatever you gain is eternal, because the soul is eternal. And Krishna is explaining in the second chapter of the Gita, what is truth? What is eternal life? What is the difference between matter and spirit? What is God? And how? What is real peace? What is real joy? What is real happiness? It must come from the platform of the soul. Sense gratification is the source of all misery. Bhogaishvaya prasatya nam taya parita chetasam yavashayatma kabhudhir samadho. To the degree we're attached to sense enjoyment, to that degree we cannot attain any advancement in spiritual life, and we must suffer. We must suffer the terrible conditions of birth and death. Yavashayatma kabhudhir ekeha kuru nandana bahusha kahinantishtha budhaya purushayana. Therefore, when we take to the path of bhakti, and we are fixed, without any confusion, without any diversion on that path, resolute in purpose and determination, then we become steady and fixed in our intelligence. And by learning Tani Saravani Sanyamya Yukta Asita Makara Vasehi Asyundriyani Pasipragyapanatishta, by learning how to fix our consciousness on Krishna and restrain the senses from the object, we become fixed in transcendental consciousness. And Krishna is explaining here, after attaining this spiritual and godly life, we are no longer bewildered by any condition of this world. We can see everything as it is. We see everything as simply the interactions of the three modes of material nature being orchestrated or controlled by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. And we know our relationship simply to accept His mercy and be His servant. In this spiritual and godly consciousness, there's no more bewilderment. Everyone in this world is bewildered except the Lord's devotee, because he knows what is truth. So the second chapter of Gita, as Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains, is the basis of the entire Gita. And by thoroughly learning this second chapter of the Gita, as you are learning in this wonderful class, you will be able to deal with every situation in life in transcendental. You can also impart that information, that light, to others. Become first-class preachers. The fundamental basic foundation of preaching is to learn thoroughly the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You will never be bewildered. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
What is night for all beings? What is your question? Explanation? Just like Srila Prabhupada in 1966, he started the ISKCON movement on 26th Second Avenue in the Lower East Side of New York City, Manhattan. And he had no money, and he had no help from any Bad Brothers or any institute or trust in India. He was on his own. He had nothing, just a little storefront they needed. He had no funds to even pay the rent for the next month. And his disciples that were coming, they were not disciples yet. They were all just, there was no disciples. They were just people taking some interest. They had no source of income. They were just living very simple lives. So, Kirtanananda, his name, Prabhupada, at that time, he was the first person that he gave a name to. He was helping him cooking, he was always anxious to help Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, your name is Krishnadas. Huh? So this Krishnadas, he wanted to help Prabhupada. So he went to get money from welfare. He was thinking he'll get money from welfare for the government by saying he's unemployed, and it'll give all that money to Prabhupada to help with the center. But at that time, he was the first person in the entire history of the Western world, that means Europe, America, who was wearing dhoti and had shaved head and tilak. So he went to the welfare office with shaved head, sika, dhoti, chadar. He said, "I want welfare money." They looked at him. I said, "Yes, of course. You sign this paper." He signed it. And as soon as he signed it, two people came and put him in ropes and took him to mental hospital, which is like a prison. Because what they did is he didn't read what he signed. He signed himself admitting himself to a mental hospital and admitting that he was insane. But he didn't know that they tricked him. And once you admit yourself, you cannot get out unless the doctors are consider that you're normal. Anyways, they said he was crazy. So at that time, the news came to Prabhupada. He was very upset with these crazy people. And then he wrote an essay called "Who is Crazy?" And in this essay, one of these small books you can read, Prabhupada says, the materialists, they think the devotees are crazy. And the devotees think that the materialists are crazy. Because a materialistic person cares nothing for God, in truth. Even if he calls himself religious, his whole life is dedicated to sense gratification and material security, simply trying to serve his body and the bodies of others. For a devotee, it's crazy, working hard like an ass all day just for some money to enjoy this body and senses, which is all an illusion. It's crazy. So devotees consider materialists totally crazy people. But the materialists think the devotees are absolutely crazy. What are they doing? Instead of going to the cinemas and watching television and listening to rock and roll, and instead of having nice sex life and eating fine foods, they're just chanting these mantras all day, and they're not enjoying any of the nice things in life. It's like there was one man who was, at one time he was the governor of Bengal. He was from the British government. His name was Lord Jetland. He was a Marquis of the British government. And after he went back to Britain, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers met with him. He was actually a very good man, very favorable toward Sanatan Dharma. And he went to Prabhupada's godbrother and said, "Can you make me a Brahmin?" He said, "Yes." He said, "You just follow these principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating." He said, "Then what will I do?" He said, What will I do? There's nothing else to do except these things. He said, "To give up these things is impossible. No one can live without these things." Yeah. Impossible. So to a materialistic person, giving up these four pillars of enjoyment, which we call the four pillars of sinful activity, is impossible. What will you do? You're crazy. Huh? If you don't eat meat, you will not be nourished. If you don't have sex, you'll go crazy, insane. You have to have sex. If you don't take intoxications, then how, there's no entertainment or social way to enjoy with together in society. Huh? It is a fact. So devotees think that materialists are crazy. Materialists think devotees are crazy. But Prabhupada said, "Who is crazy?" We have to come to the basis of what is truth. Are you the body or are you the soul? The fact is, if you are your body, then devotees are crazy. Because they're torturing their bodies by not giving their bodies anything out of them. Huh? You're brahmacharis, you're sleeping on the floor, you're eating a little rice, you get up early in the morning, you're chanting all mantras. You're doing nothing for your body, practically. If you're your body, you're crazy. But if you're the soul, then spending your whole life just decorating this corpse, it's crazy. So the question is, are you the body or are you the soul? We are the soul. Therefore, this material existence, it has everyone under the spell of Maya, and they're acting like crazy. Even in a mental hospital, what is the definition of someone who is insane?
a person who thinks that they're someone that they're not. Just like when I was young, I knew this girl. She was just in the society around us. She was one of the people that I was in college with, actually. And she used to take all kinds of LSD. You know LSD? It's a drug that makes you very happy while you're on it. And then you start seeing all beautiful colors, and you just start tasting all nice nectars, and you start smelling all fragrances, and you start hearing all celestial sounds. Some gurus, they touch you and they make you do like, I met somebody, they were telling me about their guru, they touched him head and they saw these colors, and they tasted all these fragrances and smelled all these flavors, and they could hear all celestial music. I said, you take LSD, you'll get the same result. But because she took so much LSD, she came to the realization, the ultimate realization, that she was not a human, but she was a bird. And she just went around going, chirp, 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 chirp. And everyone thought, ah, it's very funny, very funny. But then she got on a, she went to the window to jump out the window and fly. At that time, the devotees, not devotees, it was these people, they, her friends, they just, they grabbed her and they sent her to a mental hospital. And to this day, this is about 30 years ago, she's probably still chirping like birds. Yeah. Why do they call her crazy? Because she's not a bird, but she thinks she is. If a bird thinks he's a bird, we don't think we're crazy, right? To think you're someone you're not is crazy. And then you go to the mental hospital in the West, everyone thinks they're Jesus Christ, everyone thinks they're Napoleon, everyone thinks they're Hitler, right? I am the president. I am God. That's crazy. But actually, this whole world is a great big mental hospital. Because everyone thinks they're the body. And the fact is, they're not. And they're acting their whole life, spending their whole life trying to satisfy someone that they're not. So therefore, Yanisha Sarava Bhutanam Tasyam Jagrati Samyame Yasyam Jagarati Bhutanam Samyisha Tasyam. A devotee is always awake to save it to Krishna. But the karmis, they're asleep. They're asleep to any spiritual life. But they're always awake to satisfy their senses. But a devotee wants to remain always asleep to such activities. Alright? It's like our neighbors. We get up early in the morning and chant. They want to sleep. They call the police on us. Now you are disturbing us. We want to sleep. The Brahma Muhurta hour, the most precious hour of the day for spiritual advancement, no human being should ever sleep through the Brahma Muhurta hour. So precious. And we're chanting and dancing and singing the Lord's glories, and they're complaining, calling police, saying, let us sleep, let us sleep. Huh? That's when we're awake. And then late at night when they have their crazy parties, drinking their whiskey and they're taking all their intoxications and they're screaming and yelling, we want to go to sleep. Why you are disturbing us? Let us sleep. Well, they are opposite views of life. Like Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu, they have total opposite views of life. There's Prabhupada said there's always two classes, the devotees and the demons.